It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
3, 2, 1.
But I've worked it out. I love to listen to your podcast.
Whenever you say something, other people react to it.
Taking my breath away, Aaron.
Vern Lundquist joins me. Hall of Famer.
Welcome in,
Jim
everybody.
Calhoun.
Thursday night
NASCAR
edition
icon,
of the Air
Dale
Tour Sports
Earnhardt
Podcast. I'm your host,
Jr.
Air Tour.
Kirk Herbstreit is on the phone.
Hope everybody here is having a great Mother's Day. Thursday, yeah. That is right. If you're listening, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday is Mother's Day. Make sure you get your mom, your wife, whoever, the mothers in your life, some flowers. That is your PSA for today. But let me say this. For a mid-May show, we are rocking and rolling, and we got ourselves a jam-packed show, so much to discuss. We're going to open our buddy Casey, who says, I'm the baddest MF-er to ever host a College Hoops podcast, asked a question the other day, thought today was a good day to answer it. Why is Kentucky ranked so low and so many way too early top 25s? Now, I have them in the top 15, but that's neither here nor there. We're going to talk about why could that be, and are people missing out on this team? Maybe talk a little bit, by the way, about the Arkansas Razorbacks, just where they rank in the top 25, the other team that has basically replaced an entire roster this offseason. From there, we'll switch gears. Portal is hitting a very interesting crescendo. Next week is the NBA Draft Combine. Anyone that has any NBA draft dreams will probably know next week whether they are going to be drafted or not, and we should get some closure on the portal. Finally, we'll wrap with some odds and ends. Get to some football with Brian Kelly saying something that I think is totally innocent and totally harmless, and I don't think it's that big of a deal, but the internet was on fire with that one, so we'll talk about Brian Kelly's comments, maybe a little bit about Hugh Freeze said something very similar, and oh, by the way, I do want to wrap this NIL basketball tournament. CBS Sports put out a long feature on how there's going to be a tournament that basically pays players to participate. I'm going to tell you, well, I don't think it's really going to work. Before we get started, a couple quick things. One, as always, make sure to drop your comments in the chat if you're watching live on YouTube. Producer Matt will be cultivating them. He's kind of security, too. He's running the door. Sometimes it doesn't get very civil in that comment section, but make sure to drop your comments. And as always, make sure that you are subscribed on YouTube. Put on those notifications. Every time we go live, you will get a notification. Also, make sure you're subscribed, because we drop clips at all sorts of stuff over the course of a week. And oh, by the way, make sure you're subscribed on Apple, Spotify, etc. If you want to leave a 5-star review, we really would appreciate it. But that's it. It's mid-May. Everybody else is slowing down, but the Torres pod just keeps on rolling. We're like a train down the tracks. So with that said, let's not waste any more time. And let's get to the topic of the day. Topic of the day, listen, bottom line, it's May. It's sort of slow. Not a ton going on in the college sports realm, but obviously as the college hoop season has ended, as the portal cycle is winding down, we essentially have a pretty good feel for how most rosters are going to look going into next season. I think you have some schools like UConn that's basically completely done outside of an NBA draft decision or two. I think Arizona's kind of in that same spot. And there are other teams have other wants and needs, but for the most part, just about everybody has the skeleton of their roster set for 2024, 2025. There really isn't a lot of work to do. And so with it, look, I am in the media. Everybody in the media puts out these way too early top 25s, really starting the night of the national championship game. And that's a total crapshoot. You don't know who's coming back. You don't know who's going in the portal. You don't know who's staying, whatever. But we are now in mid-May, okay? It's May 9th as I'm recording, May 10th, 11th, 12th, as many of you are listening. And so rosters being largely set, there really isn't that much that is going to change on these way too early top 25s between now and the start of the season. Again, maybe a UConn bringing back Alex Caravan or losing him, an Arizona bringing back Caleb Love or losing him. But there really isn't that much that's going to change. And so I bring it up
because there is a team that I get asked about a ton when it comes to the way too early top 25s and if they are being disrespected in any way, shape, or form. That team, it is the Kentucky Wildcats, who, if you look at Torres's way too early top 25, available at AaronTorresOnline.com, I do have them in the top 15 with their roster largely set. But most of the other media either has them unranked or ranked way outside the top 25. And I'm here to say, I just frankly don't get it. So let's go ahead and dive in. Let's start, as I said, you know, with Kentucky, two things. One, you know, my way too early top 25, I have them at number 13. I'm not here to say that my opinion is right and others is wrong. But at the same time, it's worth noting that Kentucky's roster right now is basically set. By the way, they added their 10th player since our last show. If you listen to our Tuesday night show, we did mention Trent Noah, the four-star that was committed to South Carolina. He decommitted, asked out of his letter of intent. I said it's going to be Kentucky. It ends up being Kentucky. And so I bring it up because with Trent Noah, Kentucky has its 10th piece of the roster. And so really, outside of a Jackson Robinson, maybe the BYU transfer who's testing the NBA draft waters, Awuga Poplar testing the NBA from Miami, has a bunch of schools on his list, there really just aren't that many marquee pieces for Kentucky to add. And so I bring it up because, as I said, I have him in the top 15. But looking around the rest of the way too early top 25s, bluntly, there's just a lot of people that do not believe in the roster that Mark Pope has put together. Now, to be clear, I am not criticizing others in the media, but I am asking a question that, as I said, Casey, who listens to this show religiously, he put in the chat about a week ago. He said, Torres, why are we being disrespected in the way too early top 25s? And thought it was a good conversation to have. And so to be clear, here is where Kentucky is in the way too early top 25s of other big time media members outside of Torres. Maybe I'm not a big media member, but the point is, outside of my poll, here is where it is. John Rothstein ranks up to 45 teams. He has Kentucky at number 43. Gary Parrish from CBS has them unranked. He ranks 25 plus one. He calls it the top 25 and one. That's 26 teams. And Jeff Borzello has a top 25. He has Kentucky unranked. So that is where others have them. And before we get into it, let me be clear. I just want to make this abundantly clear because one thing, if you listen to this show, I am not in the business of taking shots at other media members. Now, if somebody comes at me, you know, I'm the old saying, I don't start fights, but I will finish them. So yeah, if somebody chirps at me, you know, I'll say something back. But for the most part, the three guys I mentioned, John Rothstein's been on this show multiple times. I have a ton of respect for. Gary Parrish has been on this show a few times back in the day. I have respect for him. Jeff Borzello, I have respect for them. And it's not to say that they're wrong and I'm right, but I guess I don't really understand the argument for not having them in the top 25 at this point. Again, that's their opinion. I respect others' opinions, but I just don't get it. Because again, outside of maybe a Jackson Robinson, Kentucky has done adding pieces. And so if you don't have them ranked right now, what you're basically saying is you do not believe they will be a top 25 team going into next year. And even if they add a Jackson Robinson is good, but I would argue he's not good enough to move the needle from being like unranked to a top 10 team or a top 12 team or a top 15 team. So to me, I just find it interesting. And frankly, when you actually break down the Kentucky roster, I find it a little weird because, again, if you don't have them ranked right now, what you're basically saying is you don't think they're going to be ranked going into the season. But let's look at that Kentucky roster because I know what everyone's going to say. Oh, it's a bunch of mid-major guys and guys nobody else wanted. And if you believe that, that's your opinion. Not here to tell you your opinion's wrong. But I would also say your opinion's kind of sort of a little bit wrong because if you look at the Kentucky roster and you look at who those guys are and you look at – frankly, who else they were recruited by, that tells you everything you need to know about the potential of this roster and really how good it has a chance to be. Let's just very quickly go through the Kentucky roster because I think it's better than anyone is giving it credit for except for maybe me and maybe people that follow this on a day-to-day basis. So let's start with the roster. Okay, so Lamont Butler, right? So let's start with the guys that are on the roster right now. Lamont Butler, we've talked about him a ton, especially during his recruitment. This was a guy, Final Four hero, played, really was the backbone of back-to-back Sweet 16s for San Diego State. Made a Sweet 16 last year, made a Final Four this year. I know the stats aren't great, but as we've said, maybe the best perimeter defender in college basketball. On top of that, a player that I just think, because of the system he played in, doesn't have the stats that are reflective of how good he was. Beyond that, don't take my opinion on Lamont Butler. Take others. When Lamont Butler entered the portal, Kentucky wasn't the only school that reached out. Duke reached out. Bunch of Big 12 schools reached out. By the way, everybody's raving about all these great Big 12 schools at the top of the polls going into next year. What I can tell you is there are two Big 12 teams, I'm not going to name the schools, that were waiting to see if Lamont Butler entered because they believed that he was the point guard that they wanted that they could realistically get. By the time he entered the portal, it was too late. They took another guy. Lamont Butler goes to Kentucky, whatever. By the way, if you want that validation or verification on how good Lamont Butler is, don't take my word for it again. Ask Mark Pope. Look at Mark Pope's actions. Because what did Mark Pope's actions say? Lamont Butler enters the portal on a Wednesday night. By Friday morning, the entire Kentucky staff is flying out to Vegas to meet with him. So if Mark Pope believes that he is the point guard in the face of the organization going forward, who am I to disagree with that? By the way, the likely backup point guard, Kirk Creasa, another guy, 4 years, high major power conference experience, led Arizona to a Pac-12 title and a number one seed 3 years ago. Led Arizona to a Pac-12 tournament title and a number two seed 2 years ago. This year, weird year, West Virginia, whatever, but he averaged 11 points per game, 45 assists, 41% three-point shooting, whatever. Did it in the Big 12. So this is a four-year college point guard who has done it at two different spots in the Power Five. Sounds pretty good to me as what is likely your sixth man. Let's keep it going. Kobe Brea. Kobe Brea, does that name sound familiar? How about this? Again, don't take my opinion on how good he may or may not be. Take everybody else's opinion. Don't even read the portal rankings, whatever. Kobe Brea's Final Five a few weeks ago, before he committed to Kentucky, do we remember what the Final Five was? It was UConn, Kansas, Carolina, Duke, Kentucky. So the bottom line is, five of the biggest programs, maybe the five best programs in college basketball right now, believe that he was a priority and he was a guy that they wanted. Now, ultimately, by the end, other schools took other guys. You can only get one. But if Bill Self says you're good enough for Kansas, if Dan Hurley says you're good enough for UConn, on and on, I think you're probably a pretty elite basketball player. Let's keep it going. Otega Owa averaged 11 points per game in the Big 12 this year. Now, he had kind of a quiet recruitment. We don't know who else he was recruited by, but he averaged double figures in the toughest conference of college basketball. By the way, Andrew Carr averaged almost 14 points per game in the ACC for Wake Forest. So you have two guys right there that have averaged double figures in a power conference. Let's keep it going. By the way, Andrew Carr, I forget all the visits that he had lined up, but I know Texas Tech wanted him. I want to say maybe Villanova or something. But again, was being recruited by big-time power conference schools. Let's keep it going. How about the big guys down low? Brandon Garrison, former McDonald's All-American that John Calipari wanted at Arkansas, that Rodney Terry wanted at Texas. So you are talking about a former McDonald's All-American that two of the biggest schools in college basketball, two SEC schools with seemingly unlimited NIL. Brandon Garrison said no to both of them and decided that instead he wanted to go to Kentucky. Oh, by the way, Amari Williams, 7-foot center, was recruited by everybody when he hit the portal, came down to Kentucky and St. John's. He ultimately chose Kentucky over St. John. And so let's just take a deep breath. Let's just talk about it, because the team that everybody is saying is not a top 25 team. This is what their roster consists of here on May 9th, okay? You have three guys who averaged double figures in the power conferences last year. Kirk Creasa did it, Otega Owa did it, and also on top of that, Andrew Carr did it. You have a former McDonald's All-American as a backup center. How many schools in America can say that, period? And it's not like the kid is coming off injuries or he's this or he's that or he's hurt or he's whatever. Everybody wanted this guy. Arkansas wanted him. Texas wanted him. Kentucky got him. Their starting center, two-time defensive conference player of the year. Every school that needed a big man in the portal went after this guy. And oh, by the way, they have some nice pieces coming in. And so the bottom line is a couple things. One, I'm not here to say this is the best team in the country. I'm not here to say that it's better than Kansas or Alabama or UConn. It's not a perfect roster. By the way, perfect rosters don't exist in college basketball. Doesn't happen. So it's not a perfect roster. All the pieces aren't perfect. You didn't get every guy you want in the portal, but guess what? Nobody gets every guy they want in the portal. Nobody gets every guy that they want in recruiting. Nobody gets every five-star. Nobody, you know, listen, John Calipari doesn't get every five-star, every guy that he wants. Dan Hurley doesn't get every guy that he wants. So I'm not here to say it's a perfect roster, and I'm not here to say that they probably couldn't use one more really good piece. Kentucky fans know that too. Wuga Poplar, Miami, Jackson Robinson, BYU. The bottom line remains is that there is still probably a piece to add to really put them over the top. But as I said, when I say put them over the top, to me, Jackson Robinson puts them in the conversation as an SEC championship caliber roster, as a team that can legitimately get to a Final Four, not by just getting into the tournament, but by being a 2-3 seed that is in the top 10 to top 15 all year. And so again, just want to make one thing clear. I'm not taking shots at other media members. This isn't to say that they don't know what they're talking about. Everybody that does this that I have met takes it seriously, works hard. I respect their opinions, but I just don't get it. I just don't see how you can argue that the roster Mark Pope has put together is not a top 25 roster right now, this second, and that it can't get even better with Jackson Robinson. And again, you add Jackson Robinson to a team not in the top 25, now you're probably talking a top 20-ish team. I'm sorry. I see a top 15 team already that Jackson Robinson, I believe, would take to another level. Really quickly, before we get to some portal stuff, some Brian Kelly stuff, let's just go ahead and have that same conversation about, obviously, the other team that is, whether we like it or not, whether you like it or not, inextricably locked in to the Kentucky conversation. We can argue it. We can debate it. We can say we don't care. But at the same time, every time you talk Kentucky, in a lot of ways, you kind of have to talk Arkansas as well, don't you? Because Arkansas is obviously coached by Kentucky's former head coach, who, as you may have heard, is now the Arkansas Razorbacks head coach. That's Sean Calipari. You know, most of the players on the Arkansas roster are players that Calipari either recruited to Kentucky or brought with him from Kentucky. And I think it's worth having a conversation about where Arkansas should be in the way too early top 25s. By the way, Cal did a sit down on Thursday with Dennis Dodd. I mean, I don't know when he did the sit down, but it published on Thursday. Found it a little interesting. I mean, I don't think there was anything in there that was earth shattering stuff that, frankly, if you've been locked into this show, we have been talking about pretty much for the last 6 weeks since he took that job, but it's worth a read if you get a minute. But with that said, let's talk about where I think Arkansas should be in these way too early top 25s. Now, to be clear, I have Arkansas as we stand at number 12 right now. And I think Arkansas, in my opinion, kind of fall, the other guys that do this for a living, this kind of falls, you know, Arkansas falls more in line with my thinking than Kentucky does. But looking at the other top 25s, John Rothstein actually has Arkansas basically where I do at number 13. Gary Parrish has them at number 23. Jeff Borzello has them at number 25. Again, not disrespecting what those guys say. Those guys work their butts off. I respect all of their opinions. But like I said, I think they're a little bit more in line with where I stand on Arkansas, which is that this is already a really good team that I think has a chance to add another key piece or two going forward. Now, first of all, let me say this about Arkansas, okay? One, no matter what you think about John Calipari, and I know we got a lot of BBN in the chat, and I know we got a lot of BBN that's going to comment on this video as it goes up on YouTube. But at the same time, you could debate a lot of things. Listen, John Calipari, basically, you can argue whatever, But this is, by the way, this is part of why I have Arkansas in my top 15 right now. I have them at number 12. Why I'm at number 12 is because, how about this? Even in John Calipari's down years the last couple seasons, he's basically had a team that's really a top 15 team by the end of the year. Now, there are ebbs and flows, peaks and valleys, especially when you go as young as he has this past year. But for all of the complaints about last year, for all of the disappointment, for all of the jokes that were made after the Oakland game, whatever, and again, since I know Kentucky fans are going to say it, yes, I was critical of Cal after the Oakland loss, okay? I'm not going to pretend that those tweets don't exist, that those comments don't exist. They're all still up on Twitter. They're all still up on the YouTube channel. I was very critical. But at the same time, what are we talking about with the Oakland loss? We're talking about a team that was a number three seed. So in a down year for Calipari, he had his team finish second in the toughest SEC that we have maybe ever seen, and they got a three seed in the NCAA tournament, which basically means by the end of the year, they were about a top 10 to 12 team. Now, again, you can argue the tournament failures have to factor in, but it doesn't factor in. You can, whether you have success in the tournament or not is independent of, were you good enough to compete for a national championship? And Kentucky absolutely was under Calipari this past year. By the way, 2022, the big St. Peter's loss that everybody said was the worst loss in the history of the program. I'm not going to argue it. I'm not going to argue that that was a disappointment. But guess what? They were a two seed in that tournament, which means they were somewhere between like the fifth and eighth best team in the country. So to me, don't sell me that, oh, Cal's terrible, Cal's this, Cal's that. No. By the end of the regular season, for the most part, he has his team in contention. Now, 2021, COVID year, that was a disaster. 2023, even 2023, injuries, guys in, out of the lineup. Your best player, Shaedon Sharpe, leaves a year ahead of schedule before you're planning on having him leave. He still ended up as a sixth seed. That's like a top 20-ish type team. I digress. Arkansas is, in some of these polls, a top 25 team. But again, I think they're closer to 10 to 15 than they are 20 to 25. Why is that? Well, first of all, the talent is bananas, okay? And I'm not going to go through every single player like I just did with Kentucky. But when you look at the roster, first of all, three of the most coveted portal players that were available. Don't take my word for it. Just take the word of everybody else who recruited them. John L. Davis. Everybody kind of sort of agreed that John L. Davis was probably the best player in the portal. I had him probably number two all offseason behind A.J. Storr, who committed to Kansas. It doesn't change the fact that John L. Davis was probably the best player in the portal. Jonas Adu. Where did he commit to Arkansas from? Tennessee. Played in the Elite Eight. By the way, who else was recruiting him? North Carolina, Baylor. If you're being recruited by Carolina out of the portal, if you're being recruited by Baylor out of the portal, you're a pretty good basketball player. And of course, earlier this week, Adu Thiero, much the same. He was a guy that was could have gone back to Kentucky, probably. I'm still a little unsure of how aggressively Mark Pope recruited him. I think Mark Pope was just trying to clean house, whatever. But Carolina wanted him. Hubert Davis flew to Lexington to meet with him. So don't tell me those three weren't coveted. Big Z was obviously coveted. And then, oh, by the way, only three high school players. And beyond that, three very coveted high school players. Carter Knox could have gone pretty much anywhere in the country. McDonald's All-American, top 20 player. Boogie Fland, top 20 player, could have gone anywhere in the country. And, of course, Billy Richmond, a guy that had offers from Memphis and a bunch of really talented places. Those are all really good players. And so I see what everybody else sees, and I see why people have them in the top 25. Really, the only knock you could have against them is, well, they only have seven players right now. It's like, yeah, they only have seven players. But if you listen to Coach Cal, that's kind of by design. Like I mentioned the Dennis Dodd article earlier. I don't think it was anything earth-shattering. That's not to criticize Dennis Dodd. It's just to say it was kind of a surface-level piece. All the stuff that we've talked about, all the stuff that I've told you happened behind the scenes, the story basically confirmed. But at the same time, one thing Cal did say is, listen, last year, one of our faults was we had too many talented players. He mentioned Reed Sheppard. Reed Sheppard said that he thought, he being Reed Sheppard, he was basically going to be a towel boy, 10th, 11th guy, and was going to spend 4 years at Kentucky. nobody thought he was going to be a lottery pick. And so I think part of Kentucky's downfall last year was by the end of the season, they had too many guys. Part of it's on Cal. Never settled on a rotation, played too many guys, whatever. But also, part of it was they were still really, really, really good. And so when people want to criticize Cal that they only have seven guys, I think that's by design. Cal, in his best years, has really stuck with a 7-8-man rotation and not backed off from it. And so you have the seven. DJ Wagner is visiting this weekend. I believe he's going to be number eight probably by Monday or Tuesday. But then from there, I don't really see Arkansas adding very many more pieces. Maybe another shooter. Maybe another big guy. But I think that's it, right? Isn't that part of being a coach? Isn't that part of evaluating and getting better is figuring out what works and what didn't? And so if your argument against Arkansas being in the top 25 or being in the top 20 or being in the top 15 is they only have seven players, I don't really think they're adding much more, just like what I said with Kentucky a minute ago. But also, let me ask you this. How many people's top sevens right now are better than Arkansas? Because it ain't very many, okay? There's a few. I mean, listen, I'm not going to lie. Kansas has a really good top seven. Just kicked out Riley Kugel. Didn't kick him out. That's the wrong way to put it. But Riley Kugel's gone. But other than that, Kansas has a really good top seven. UConn's got a really good top seven. I'll be honest. I'm a UConn guy. I don't know that on paper, UConn's top seven is better than Arkansas's top seven. Now, Dan Hurley's been killing it the last few years. So that's not really a criticism of Dan Hurley. But I don't think on paper, the top seven is better. Could they be better next season because Dan Hurley is an elite, the best coach in college basketball? Sure. Alabama, maybe they have a better top seven. Maybe they don't. We'll see what Mark Sears and Jaren Stevenson do. But there's not many. Maybe Baylor, probably not. Maybe Iowa State, probably. Like, there aren't that many better top sevens. And so I just bring it up to say that the top 25 stuff is very interesting to me. As I said, rosters are mostly set, and it sets up for a fascinating couple weeks. But, you know, I think Kentucky is largely underrated. I think Arkansas is underrated as well. Everybody go ahead, drop in your questions. We are going to get to some questions. Be civil in the chat. Producer Matt's wearing his bouncer shirt. I don't need him throwing any of you out of here. That's what we're going to do. Take a quick break, come back. There are a couple portal notes that I want to get to. And then we'll get to some of the odds and ends from the week. I found the reaction to the Brian Kelly comments much more interesting than the Brian Kelly comments themselves. Also, this NIL basketball tournament, I'll explain what that's about. By the way, I think next week we got to bring back Aaron Right, Aaron Wrong, the best and worst takes of the week. We'll save it for another show. We're already 27 minutes in. Take a quick break. More hoops, then football, then your questions. Quick break. Be right back. Before we do, many of you ask me all the time, Torres, what can I do to help support the show? You give me hours and hours and hours of content every single week. What can I do to help you? Well, I'll tell you what. Do me a quick favor. Check out the Aaron Torres Media merchandise store for all of your team-specific shirts, hats, and more, all available at AaronTorresOnline.com/merchandise. A lot of you wondering, Torres, what can I get in that merch store? Well, first of all, we got our brand new Hope and Pope Kentucky basketball t-shirts. That's right. Mark Pope has arrived. He is here to save the day. Get your Hope and Pope t-shirts there. Also, Arkansas fans, the Big Pig Invasion is here. You can get your tees there. Basketball School Alabama shirts. Mora Hurley 2024 UConn shirts for your tailgates at Rentschler Field, your games at the XL Center or Gamble. And oh, by the way, your Mike Effin Woodson gear for Indiana. If you love football, we got you covered too. We got more Dion shirts and hats than we even know what to do with. The freeze warning has hit the plains. Auburn fans, grab your freeze warning tees now. And of course, our new era, new rule shirt applies to Nebraska football and its incredible fan base. We have more coming for the fall, plenty in stock right now. So make sure to check out the Aaron Torres Media merch store at AaronTorresOnline.com/merchandise. And you can always hit me up with any questions, AaronTorresPodcastQuestions@gmail.com. All right, everybody. All right, back. Good to be back. I do want to switch gears. And yes, I don't want to say for the last time, but we're getting pretty close to the end of our College Hoops transfer portal updates, news, and notes. But I do think there's still enough meat on the bone to discuss it just a little bit. And what I would also say is that I do think that this week is probably a pretty important week in terms of the transfer portal for the reason we mentioned up top. If you haven't been listening live, if you missed the top of the show, this coming week is going to be a very important week for the following reason. The NBA Draft Combine is coming up, okay? So the NBA Draft Combine is not as big of a deal as the NFL Draft Combine, obviously, but essentially like the top 50, 60 players in the draft pool get invited to Chicago to be measured, to test, in some cases to work out, in some cases to play 5-on-5. And really, it's no different really than the NFL Draft Combine from this perspective. A guy like Donovan Klingon, a guy like Steph Castle, a guy like Reed Shepard, they're not going to play 5-on-5. They're not probably going to interview with all 30 teams. But for those fringe guys, what is interesting is that it's probably a spot where guys that are on the fence are going to really kind of figure out, okay, am I really a draftable prospect or not? And more importantly, am I going to be drafted in a spot that I want, or do I need to go back to college for another year? Now, this doesn't pertain to the transfer portal, but from that perspective, think of somebody like an Alex Caravan. Alex Caravan from UConn. Dan Hurley has said pretty much if he is a first-round pick, he's gone. If he's not a first-round pick, he's going to come back. So he's not in the portal. This is a portal segment, but I'm just using that as an example of a guy that is really going to be able to measure his NBA prospects. But then you have other guys who are in the portal who may be transferring, but kind of want to see what their NBA futures look like before they make a decision on a transfer. So think of, and we've talked about this before, but like last year with Grant Nelson, who ended up at Alabama. He declared for the draft, went through the entire process. I think he probably wanted to go pro last year, probably not a draftable prospect, comes back, then his recruitment really starts, and he ends up committing to Alabama. So I bring all that up to say, this is a big week because there are 2, 3, 4 guys that are going to be in Chicago for that draft combine, and if it goes really well, they're probably not coming back to college. If it does not go well, then they may be coming back to college, and it could have an impact on next season. One, we will not talk about very much because I talked about him on Sunday's show and nothing has changed. That's Jackson Robinson, who was at BYU, their leading scorer, who is in the NBA draft. We don't need to go over this for a third, fourth time in the last month, but this is a kid, was BYU's leading scorer, played for Mark Pope, entered the transfer portal after Mark Pope left, but also tested the NBA draft waters. He's a guy, my understanding, I believe, listen, if he goes to Chicago and he feels comfortable where he's going to be drafted, I think he probably wants to go pro. Played 4 years of college basketball, 3 different schools already. I don't get the sense that he is dying to come back to college. But if it doesn't go well, he's going to have some incredible NIL opportunities. And frankly, he's probably almost certainly going to go to Kentucky. He's a guy that will have the opportunity to make a lot of NIL money, but as importantly, be the face of a Kentucky basketball team that's going to be on national TV 2 times a week. That's one of the biggest brands in college basketball that's as talked about as any program in college basketball. So he is probably a name that you absolutely have to keep an eye on and that we'll probably talk about throughout next week. By the way, we'll probably do like an NBA draft combine preview on Monday's show. But Jackson Robinson is probably the biggest name. We've talked enough about him. Let's get to some other names in the portal, because there were some very interesting updates over the last week or so. So first off, let's talk Coleman Hawkins. He's the guy from Illinois, 6'9", 6'10", more of a stretch 4 than a 5. I don't even want to call him a big man because he doesn't play like a big man, but averaged 13 points per game, really dealt with kind of a lot of injuries, but is kind of a program legend, helped them to the Big Ten Tournament Championship this year, multiple Big Ten Tournament Championships actually going back to his freshman year. This year averaged 12 points per game, 37% three-point shooting. But like I said, missed a couple games with injury, slow out of the gate coming into the season, but was a very interesting player because right before the deadline, enters his name in the transfer portal. And everybody freaked out, and everybody's trying to figure out, what does it mean? And he put out that kind of Aaron Rodgers, relax, R-E-L-A-X tweet, where he basically said, look, this is just to protect all my options, but my focus is on the NBA draft. Why do I bring it up? We talked about it on Monday's show. It's because he did an interview with Jeff Goodman where he basically said, like, basically he did an interview over the weekend with Jeff Goodman that really kind of made it sound like, frankly, he's probably more open to returning to college basketball than I think many of us thought. And so that was interesting. He said that he would not be going to any Big Ten schools. He respects the rivalries. But he also said what I also thought was interesting was that Illinois probably would not be on the table. That he felt like that they had recruited a roster to replace him. It wasn't fair to the kids in the program. And so he probably would not be going back to Illinois. Why do I bring it up? Well, it's because Matt Norlander, CBS, I guess on his podcast. Now, I listened to the podcast and it was a very loose, you know, people are quoting it as if it's like a Final Four Joe Tipton graphic, but it was a very loose, hey, these are some schools that are sort of loosely linked to Coleman Hawkins. By the way, it's not a criticism of Norlander. It's just, it was like people tried to make it into a report. And I don't know that it was really like an official report. Anyway, bring it up. The four schools that Norlander brought up were Louisville, North Carolina, Arkansas, and Kansas State. Interesting list from a couple perspectives. First off, the Arkansas stuff is interesting for the following reason. It's interesting because, of course, Arkansas's assistant coach is Chin Coleman. Chin Coleman was at Illinois. Chin Coleman didn't really recruit Coleman Hawkins necessarily, but obviously has a relationship. I'll be honest, I don't know that I really see the fit right now for Arkansas. But the other three are very interesting for a very simple reason. It is because they very clearly need another big man. They have very clearly missed out on big men. And they very clearly have money to spend on a big man. Now, to be clear, I don't think Coleman Hawkins, he isn't like your 7 foot back to the basket center. But all three of those schools clearly need size, clearly raised NIL money, and clearly right now are scraping the bottom of the barrel trying to find a guy. Not to say Coleman Hawkins is a bottom of the barrel guy. I'm just saying it's very clear that they would need some help in the front court. North Carolina was a finalist for Cliff Omoyori. We obviously remember the report from Joe Tippin where he said that Omori basically turned down a bigger NIL offer to commit to Alabama. The number that Joe Tipton put out there was $2 million. I think that's crazy money. I think that's funny money for Cliff Omoyori. But if somebody's willing to spend it, who am I to say that it's wrong? It's their money, spend it how you want to spend it. Anyway, I bring it up because it seems as though everyone believes that North Carolina was the one that had the $2 million offer for Cliff Omoyori. So you know they need another big guy. I think they're pretty set at four other positions. Bring back RJ Davis, K Tyson, et cetera, is coming in from the portal. But they need another big guy, so North Carolina makes sense. Kansas State was also a finalist for Cliff Omoyori. A little bit of a quieter offseason for Jerome Tang. Don't know that they've made any huge splashes yet, so we'll see. And then Louisville, look, I think there was a moment where we thought Jaden Quaintance was going there. He goes to Arizona State. They've taken a visit from Great Osabor, so they clearly need help in the front court. And we know that Pat Kelsey in this first offseason has raised a lot of NIL money. Either way, bottom line, Coleman Hawkins, this is a recruitment to follow because if things don't go well next week at the NBA Draft Combine, I think he's more open to return to college basketball than a lot of people think. A couple more names in the portal that are interesting or worth noting. Riley Kugel, welcome back to the portal, my man. So Riley Kugel entered the portal. One of the first real marquee players to enter the portal was a sixth man at Florida, averaged right around double figures this year. Enters the portal. This is one of the funniest portal things that's happened all offseason. Enters the portal within, I believe it was a day, puts out a Final Four. So, hate to say it, I think he was probably tampered with. Puts out a Final Four. Then, on top of that, commits the following day. I know for a fact at least one, and I believe two schools in his Final Four never even reached out. So, it was one of those, I'm entering the portal. I know where I'm going, but I have to pretend this is a real recruitment so nobody accuses me of being tampered with, okay? but he commits to Kansas. And I'm not saying Kansas tampered with him, but you kind of know. Commits to Kansas. And then Bill Self a couple days ago does an interview with Andy Katz. And Andy Katz basically references Riley Kugel. And Bill Self says, yeah, we don't know if he's really coming this year. We'll take a look. We're going to see. Well, it comes out, Matt Norlander, who's been crushing this offseason, puts out a tweet that Riley Kugel is not going. So he's back out on the market. Very interesting. Now, the rumor is, I don't like to talk about grades and transcripts, but that there was some sort of issue with transcripts. Basically, you know, Bill Self, the report that I saw, basically wanted him on campus for the start of summer school. He wouldn't be available at that point. But also, independent of that, and I'm not here to criticize an individual player or his academics, but also Kansas has crushed the portal. And so with AJ Storr from Wisconsin, with Rylan Griffin from Alabama, with Hunter Dickinson back, with DeJuan Harris back, there's just not a ton of shots to go around. Zeke Mayo from South Dakota State. So I think this is probably best for everybody. What'll be interesting to see is where he ends up. Now, as I mentioned, that Final Four of Houston, Arizona, and UConn, don't really see a fit at UConn. Don't really see a fit at Arizona. I think if anything, maybe Houston would sort of make sense. But it'll be interesting to see. I don't know that I have a great feel for that recruitment right now. Very interesting name to keep an eye on. By the way, another name that is very interesting. I think part of this is we're just getting towards the end of the portal cycle. You know, guys that are still in obviously are in demand. Chaz Lanier is a very interesting name. So this is a kid played at North Florida. Okay. The Ospreys, baby. How much you know about the Ospreys? What you know about those Ospreys? But the North Florida Ospreys. And what was interesting about him, 4-year player and just blew up this year. Okay. Had never averaged more than 4 points per game as a college player. And this is now entering his fourth year. Not like he had one quiet season and then blew up. This year averaged 19.5 points per game on 44% three-point shooting. Well, he entered the NBA draft, but it feels like he's going to come back to college. And it feels like this is going to be a Kentucky-Tennessee battle. He's originally from Nashville, but I do think the bottom line is those are two schools that I think, listen, I don't think that he is, you know, I don't think he's like number one on anybody's board in terms of like the best player left. But I think he fills a very important role, which is that he is really, really, really good at shooting the basketball. You can never have too much three-point shooting, especially around this time of year. Chaz Lanier, again, he's one like a Coleman Hawkins. I could see him being so good that he never even returns to college. Same with Jackson Robinson. Chaz Lanier, to me, is a name. I do think he's going to be back in college basketball next year. Feels like a Tennessee versus Kentucky thing. Tennessee, we haven't talked about a ton this offseason. I actually feel pretty good about their roster. Justin Gainey's back. Zakai Ziegler's back. A couple other guys are back. They've added a couple nice pieces out of the portal. The Igor kid down low from Charlotte. Felix Akpara from Ohio State, the high scoring kid from Hofstra. So we'll see, because it does feel like Tennessee, like Kentucky, can probably use one more piece. Only other real portal note, you know, Wuga Poblar from Miami, really good scorer. John Rothstein put out a list a few days ago. I don't know that there's anything earth shattering on that list. He's a kid. He averaged about 13 points per game. He's from Philly. Villanova was on that list, but man, oh man, just about everybody was on that list, because you look at the schools that were there. Auburn is in the mix. Villanova's in the mix. TCU's in the mix. Louisville, Kansas. A lot of schools have reached out. Feels like Kansas would be a little bit of a stretch. Oregon is in the mix. So we'll see. Fourth year player, averaged 13 points per game at Miami this year, but he is a big name that is still in the portal and is still very much coveted by all of these schools. Let's go ahead and wrap a couple other topics before we get out of here. What I'm going to do something weird. I'm going to go to football, then come back to basketball. Then we're going to go back to, well, I guess we're going to go from basketball to football, back to basketball. We'll wrap the show. By the way, going on 45 minutes here. I'm just going to take a quick swig of water. Just get my breath here. That's it. Let's switch gears. And I've said this a few times. But I've said this a few times, is that basically is that we're going to really ramp up the football stuff, but it is still a very quiet time on the football calendar. And what's funny about that is, and this is why I love being able to talk college football and college basketball, because the problem with covering college football, if college football is your only beat, where the issue comes in is pretty straightforward, okay? Where the issue comes in, if you're only a college football guy, is the season ended in January. You know, you got a little bit of a push because Nick Saban retired, Caleb Downs transfers, Caden Proctor transfer, then transferred back, whatever. But for the most part, if you love college football, there really hasn't been anything that's happened since like February, and you're grasping at straws, okay? And so when something happens right now, it just feels like everybody that covers college football, it's like raw meat being thrown to a hungry lion. Everybody's just looking for something to talk about. And I think stuff this time of year gets blown out of proportion. Remember a few years ago, Jimbo Fisher had the famous line, "We're going to beat Alabama." And it became like the biggest story in the world. And everybody had to get out their takes about why Jimbo Fisher doesn't know what he's talking about. Bring it up, because we had one of those situations earlier this week. Brian Kelly, he did a sit down with one of the local outlets. Credit my buddy Carter Bryant, who runs a great, great, great LSU football channel, for bringing the quote to light. Brian Kelly said something. Everybody freaked out. I don't think it's a big deal, but here's what he said. He said, okay, so he's asked about kind of recruiting, portal. The D-line is obviously an area of need for everybody, but especially LSU. Worth noting, by the way, in the transfer portal in football, D-line play is basically about as coveted a position as there is. And obviously, if you want a player, you're probably going to have to pay pretty premium money. So here is what Brian Kelly said. He said, "I think I made it pretty clear in a number of press conferences that I had that we were in the market in recruiting in the transfer portal looking for defensive linemen. It hasn't fared very well, quite frankly, because we're selling something a little bit differently. And that is, we want to recruit, we want to engage, we want to build relationships. We want to develop, retain, and have success. We're not in the market of buying players. And unfortunately, right now, that's what some guys are looking for. They want to be bought." And so Brian Kelly said that. And the second that he said that, all the big media members, that, by the way, Brian Kelly's one of those guys that is just a nonstop punching bag, but all the big media members, how can he say that? This is the era that we live in. How could Brian Kelly possibly say that? He's so out of touch. Let me just say, everybody calm the you-know-what down. It isn't that big of a deal. I think this is the most overblown quote ever. And as a matter of fact, I think if he said this in like December, in the middle of bowl prep and National Signing Day and whatever, I don't even think it would have made a peep. But because it's Brian Kelly, because nobody likes him, except for Torres and LSU fans, and because there's nothing else to talk about, it became the biggest story in the world. Okay, so first of all, do I think it was the perfect quote? No. But Brian Kelly, he's kind of a clunky guy. Okay, listen, some guys are great speaking to the media, and some guys have all the perfect answers at all the perfect times. Brian Kelly's not one of them. Brian Kelly always says weird stuff, and he's kind of not great in front of the camera. Remember like 3 or 4 years ago, I think it was his last year at Notre Dame, they're playing Florida State. Do you remember this quote? He said that he was asked about the execution. It was a halftime interview. And he was asked about his team's first half execution. Remember what he said? He said, "I'm in favor of execution. Maybe our entire team needs to be executed after tonight. We just didn't execute very well." It's a weird quote, right? And it became a national story because it was Brian Kelly. It was Labor Day weekend. I think it was one of those Sunday night games. It was the only game in town. I actually think it was after a win. So I don't think it was halftime. I think it was after a win. But he says weird stuff. He doesn't say things perfectly, but really, at the end of the day, what people are complaining about with the Brian Kelly quote is pretty straightforward. What they're complaining about is one word, and it's interesting. I was talking to my buddy David Nuno Texags about this today, is that what everyone is freaking out about is the word bought, is the word buying players. And really, all he had to do is restructure that conversation with one other word instead of buying players, and everybody would have been fine with it. Because what Brian Kelly was not saying, he wasn't saying we don't do NIL here. What he wasn't saying was we don't pay players here. Everybody pays players, you know that. What he was basically saying is we're just not going to get into bidding wars for players that we don't think are good enough. Yes, we're going to pay them. Yes, we're going to believe that pay them for what we believe is fair. But if the number just keeps going up at a certain point, we're going to say no if that is only what this is about. Now, I know what everyone's going to say. Well, that's what this era is about. It's all about just paying players. And it's about the highest bidder and you have to deal with it. Well, no, you don't. Because guess what? A lot of the best coaches feel the same way. Because we talk basketball on this show, what have we talked about all spring long? When Liam McNeely, the five-star guard, committed to UConn, what did we say? We said Dan Hurley has been very vocal about his NIL stance. His stance on NIL is pretty straightforward. We're competitive. We never want to lose a kid because we're not even close on a number, but we also never want to take a kid simply because of NIL. We want to make sure that he fits culturally, that he fits what we're about, that he's about winning, that he's about working, that he's about this. And of course, we're going to take care of him financially. Well, guess what? Isn't that the exact same thing that Brian Kelly just said? By the way, you know who else very much shares this sentiment and has shared it publicly? Kirby Smart, Nick Saban. Both of those coaches, what have they said? What have they said? They've said NFL, not NIL. We're going to take care of you. We're going to make sure you get paid. Kirby Smart has said every guy on our roster has some sort of NIL deal. But if you're picking us solely because of NIL, you know, if you're just looking for the highest number, there's a number we're comfortable with, but we're just not going to get into a bidding war with everybody to get you. And so Kirby Smart said it. Nick Saban said it. Dabo Sweeney has said all sorts of things similar. Dabo Sweeney said he was going to retire if players got paid. What he was really saying was, you know, I'm not anti-NIL, but it's got to be true NIL. So I could go on and on. But Dan Hurley has said this. Nick Saban has said it. Kirby Smart has said it. I think those are pretty good people that know what they're doing. And so I have no problem with Brian Kelly, what Brian Kelly said. By the way, you know who else doesn't have a problem with it? LSU fans. Because everyone's like, oh, well, what is this saying to your fans? What you're actually saying to your fans is, well, I respect you guys. I respect the donations that you make, the money that you invest into this program, and we're just not going to spend it recklessly. We're not going to get into these NIL bidding wars where we're overpaying for guys and we're just giving them money that they have no chance of meeting the expectation. I'm not going to spend, you know, I'm just throwing out numbers. I'm not going to spend $800,000 on a $200,000 player. I'm not going to spend $1 million on a $250,000 player. I respect your money. By the way, you know what else I heard? Oh, it's going to make recruiting impossible. Because you just told players that you're not about NIL. No, I actually think it's going to make recruiting easier in a lot of ways. Because what you just told players and what you just told parents is, guess what? We want to bring in your kid. We don't want to make it a business transaction. We don't want to make it solely about the money. We want to develop your son. We want to make him a better person, a better man, a better husband, a better football player. We want to put him in position to succeed when he leaves this place. That's a bad thing. And there's going to be players that are just about the highest dollar amount. And that's okay. That's fine. We talk about it all the time. There's nothing wrong with making your money. I get it. But the idea that Brian Kelly said something that controversial, I just don't buy it. I just think if rather than saying, hey, we're not in the market of buying players, what he said is we're not in the market of getting in endless bidding wars for players. I don't think that's that bad. But it's Brian Kelly. And this is another thing about college football. And I don't know why this is, but there are certain guys in college football that everybody loves and are just protected. And then there are certain guys that everybody hates. Jim Harbaugh for years. Everybody hated Jim Harbaugh. He's the worst. He's this. He's that. He's so overrated. Now, Jim Harbaugh's pretty properly rated. For most of his time as a college football coach, he was probably somewhere between like the third and seventh best coach in college football. He was pretty properly rated. Last couple of years, he was awesome. Won 3 straight Big Ten championships, won a national title. Everybody hates Jim Harbaugh. Everybody hates Dabo Sweeney. Everybody hated Jimbo Fisher when he was there. And Brian Kelly's the same way. So Brian Kelly, my man, I got your back. Ignore the haters. And by the way, like I said, I do think if this was like, you know, if this was mid-December instead of mid-April or mid-May, I don't think this would have been a big story, but it was, and I think it's because of Brian Kelly. Finally, last thing. Did you see this story? Shout out Matt Norlander. He's getting a lot of buzz on this show. Have known Matt for years. So Norlander and Dennis Dodd put out a piece earlier this week on this big NIL, So he put out a big piece about one of those Thanksgiving basketball tournaments. We call them in the biz, we call them MTEs. MTE means a multi-team event. So think Maui Invitational. Think Battle for Atlantis. Think all those events. And basically, it's an 8-team tournament in Vegas around that time that they eventually want to expand to 16 and maybe beyond. And basically, the sole purpose of it is to put together really good basketball games, but also to make sure that players get a big chunk of any profits in NIL. And so it was an interesting article. And of course, because it's the internet, everyone did the thing of, this is the next great wave of how things are going to be done in college basketball. To which I say, I don't really see it. I don't really see it. Let me explain why. First of all, by the way, this is not new, okay? I could tell you straight up, there have been, especially the last couple of years, there's been a lot of these, you know, neutral site events where the players, maybe it's not publicized, but the players are getting a little bit of cut of any profits. When your team is playing on like a Wednesday night in Fort Worth in front of like 1,000 fans, you know, all those games that you turn on like ESPNU 9 o'clock at night on a Wednesday in December. And I'm just using these schools as an example. I'm not saying this is what happened, but I remember like Tennessee played NC State on like a Tuesday in Arlington, Texas or Fort Worth, Texas. And I'm not saying that game specifically, but what I am saying, a lot of those games, you know, they're put together to get some money in the pockets of the players. So this is not new. Okay. But at the same time, I found it interesting because like I said, everyone said, oh, this is the next big thing and everything's going to be about NIL. And everything is about NIL, unless you're Brian Kelly or Hugh Freeze, by the way. I didn't even get into the Hugh Freeze comments. Had nothing, no problem with what Hugh Freeze said. Other than that, he, you know, is developing Peyton Thorne, which, you know, another conversation for another day. Producer Matt and I will have that one off air. Okay, so with this NIL event, why I don't think it's going to fly. And I'll be quick on this because we're an hour into the show, as we always do. We're going long here. But why I don't believe this NIL event is going to work is pretty simple. It is because if you read the fine print of the article, it's really well reported. This isn't a criticism of the reporters. Big theme on today's show. I'm not criticizing other people's work in my industry. But if you read the fine print, even the big events like the Maui Invitational, the Battle for Atlantis, they maybe turn a profit of $1 million or two, but really they're break-even ventures, okay? So that's one. And two, what I also found interesting was that this event could be backed by kind of corporate finance or by angel investors, you know, kind of Silicon Valley type people. And so why I just don't think it's going to work is because when you've been doing this as long as I have, and I'm getting old, more gray hairs come in. Every time I get my hair cut, girl cuts my hair, says, Aaron, you're getting a lot of gray hairs back there, buddy. We're going to have to do a cut and a dye job here pretty soon. Anyway, been doing this a long time. And the one thing that I have learned is this. I've seen a lot of things that are projected to lose money early on. And what ends up happening with every single one is you see it. Oh, give it a year. Give it two. Our projections are to turn a profit in year 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. And what ends up happening? You don't turn a profit in year one. Don't turn a profit in year two. Eventually, the people that are actually putting up the money to do all this stuff are going to say, where is the return on my investment? And so you see this all the time. Best example I can think of in recent years. We're going to bring back Aaron Right, Aaron Wrong next week. But remember G League Ignite? There has never been a story that I've been more right on than G League Ignite. It was the NBA-funded minor league system for high school superstars. And the idea is you pay a high school star $1 million or $800,000 or whatever. They don't go to college and they come develop with the NBA. And I think Adam Silver long-term, oh, this is going to be a thing. We're going to make this a thing and it's going to be the minor league and you see the best young players in our minor league system. Okay, cool. And by the way, it was before NIL, but NIL is not what killed it. What killed it was that it was a terrible business proposition from the beginning. I said it. You can go back. I did podcasts on this in 2020, 2021. Go back and listen to those shows. Download those podcasts on the Apple feed. You can find them still. They're still up. I said, this isn't going to work because just think about it. What you're basically doing, you're paying all these players $500,000, $1 million, $800,000, whatever. Then you're flying them out to where you're training. You're probably paying for their housing. By the way, they're 18 years old. You're probably paying for their parent. You know, they're either going to have a parent or a handler or an agent staying with them. So you're paying for the handler's, you know, housing. You're paying for their meal prep. You're paying for their training. You're paying for the facility to work out in. You're paying them salaries. By the way, you got to bring in a couple veterans to play with them. You got to pay for a coaching staff. You got to pay for travel when they play in these events. You're flushing down tens of millions of dollars without any chance of seeing that money again. And so Adam Silver can do all the, you know, the what's the right word I'm looking for? The hyperbole about, oh, well, you know, NIL changed everything. And, you know, these kids can now make money in college and I'm so happy for them. No, if Adam Silver was turning a profit on that bad boy, he would invest more money and he'd say, screw college basketball, because Adam Silver doesn't really believe in the college basketball model. That's why Adam Silver, one of many reasons, he's a clown. Anyway. G League Ignite, perfect example. 5-6 years in, they're losing tens of millions of dollars and they just cut it off. By the way, you know, there's just a million examples. So I could go on and on, but this event sounds great on paper. Oh, every team's going to get $1 million. Every team's going to get 800,000. Every player's going to get a check at the end of it. And it's all good. But at the end of the day, at some point you have to turn a profit. At some point people stop wanting to put their money in the middle without getting that money back. It's not just sports. Remember the Athletic? Oh, the first year of the Athletic. Oh, we're going to spend all this money and we're going to have a beat writer in every city and we're going to cover everything. I actually worked for the Athletic in year one. Best job I ever had. They just flew me all over the country to do like one article a week. It was great. That was when I was a writer. But anyway, at a certain point, the people running the Athletic were like, we actually got to make some money. And then they cut jobs. Thankfully, I was freelance. So I didn't get fired, but whatever. They cut jobs. They cut travel budget. Now the Athletic is whatever. But I just bring it up because this thing, let's mark this down. May 9th, 2024. It's this grill. It's an NIL event. Everyone's going to get paid. And they might for a year or two. But by 3, 4, 5, if it's not turning a profit, I don't see it lasting. And I don't think this is like the death knell for the Maui Invitational or anything like that. All right, I've gone over an hour. Let's get, if there's one or two questions, we don't have to go super long. It's a Thursday. It's May. It's going to be May. My brain's fried. I'm seeing some of these troll questions in here. I don't appreciate that. Anyone with a serious question, feel free. By the way, I saw somebody when we did the merchandise piece, somebody said, who's Mora with the Mora Hurley tee? How dare you disrespect Jim Mora, UConn football coach? All right. Question. Devil Doc. Why is nobody talking about Indiana? They killed the portal. Well, first of all, we love Mike Effin Woodson on this show. And they did kill the portal. And by the way, we did a video when they got Umar Ballo. We did a video when they got Cannon Carlisle. And I think we did a video when they got not Luke Goody. I'm trying to think of who the other big name was. Miles Rice. I love what Mike Woodson did in the portal. One thing we'll probably do it next week is portal winners and losers. And they are absolutely a portal winner. By the way, quick thing on portal winners. I got to give a shout out to our guy, friend of the pod. We had him on about a month ago. You all see what Will Wade is doing at McNeese State. Got a commitment yesterday from a kid that played at Syracuse that averaged 9.5 points per game. Basically a double figure scorer in the ACC is going to McNeese State. Okay. And that's on top of the fact they got Brandon Murray, who was a player that actually played for Will Wade at LSU, was the SEC freshman of the year in Will Wade's last season, goes to Georgetown, was Georgetown's leading scorer. Now, this year he went to Ole Miss. He had some issues, injuries, whatever. But you have that kid. You have Sincere Parker from St. Louis, who averaged like 17 points per game this year. Will Wade, like I said it on Twitter, and I kind of said it like jokingly, and of course people got offended. I said, McNeese State would finish third in the ACC next year. Now, that's hyperbole. They wouldn't finish in third. But Will Wade is a beast. And so we'll do portal winners and losers, but to Devil Doc's question, no doubt about it, Indiana is one of the big portal winners. I actually like what they did. I'm not a subscriber that because they struggled this year that they're incapable, but I believe Indiana was one of the big winners of the portal. Okay, great question from Leon and Franklin. Leon and Franklin says, is there any way Kentucky gets both Jackson Robinson and Chaz Lanier? So you're at 10 players right now. My guess is it's probably one or the other. I listen, Mark Pope, promise is the wrong word, because promise is like, I promised him a starting spot. I promised him this. I promised him that. I don't believe that Mark Pope has made like egregious promises. Like, I'm going to give you 28 minutes a game. But when you bring in an Otega Owo, when you bring in a Kobe Brea, I just don't think you can bring in a million guys behind him. And listen, if we want to criticize Cal for anything, he had too many guys this last year. And so that's kind of on him for having too many guys. Now, part of it was injuries in the preseason, Aaron Brett, whatever. The point I'm trying to make is at some point, it can't just be about talent accumulation. This isn't a Major League Baseball roster where it doesn't really matter if guys play the same. Like, you can only have so many wings that want to get buckets. You can only have so many big guys. You can only have so many point guards, ball handlers, before it gets to a point where guys get, you know, mad or there's locker room problems or whatever. And so could any shot they could get both? Yeah, I think there's a shot. I don't know that it's what's best, given that you have Kobe Brea, that you have Otega Owo, that you have Lamont Butler in the backcourt, that you have Kirk Reese. I mean, that's already right there. Four guys right now that expect to probably be playing somewhere between 15 and 25 minutes minimum. If you add a Jackson Robinson, that's a fifth guy. And oh, by the way, you add even more after that, that's where it starts to get cramped. That's where a guy like Travis Perry maybe never gets off the bench. Trent Noah never gets off the bench. I could it happen? Yes. I don't think that it will. Question. Sorry, stepped away. I know it's early, but if you had to put money on the next champ, who? It's really funny you say that, Derek Brown. Great question. So I think people know this. Many of you may not. So I live in California. No legal sports betting here, unfortunately. My mom has a retirement home in Vegas. Go to see her about a couple times a year. She still lives in Connecticut part of the year. May have mom place a futures bet on Alabama for me. Alabama's the one. The odds aren't great. I think in DraftKings, they're second behind. I think they're second behind Kansas. I think it's second behind Kansas, but I think Alabama to me is monstrous. I think they're really good. I think they're built to win. And I think they have the combination of everything. They have NBA talent, which matters. I keep saying it. The number one predeterminant of national champions, do you have NBA talent? It's not about veterans. It's not about coaching. It's not about this. It's not about that. UConn 2 years ago probably is going to end up with six or seven NBA players. This year's team, all five guys got drafted, got sent to the NBA draft combine. Four of them are probably going to get drafted. Alex Carabin will get drafted. And some of the young guys, I think, eventually get drafted. NBA talent. They obviously have coaching with Nate Oates. So to me, they're probably the one that I would bet on. You know, Kansas is probably the most talented team. But with Kansas, you know, a lot of new pieces coming, you know, coming in with the new, with the returnees. But I would say if I had to put money on anybody, it'd be Alabama. I'd have to look a little closer at the odds. But Alabama's probably the one. I like Iowa State. I don't think Iowa State can win a championship. Baylor's a lot of new pieces. Houston's maybe one that I would probably consider. But I would say Alabama and Houston outside of Kansas are probably the ones that I would do. Trying to think of anybody else that would really stand out. Those are probably the ones right there. All right, we got a super chat from Jude. He said, super chat, hey dog, I'm a huge fan. The top moment in my YouTube career. Great question from Jude. Top moment in my YouTube career. If it's just YouTube, you know, I would just say the growth of this channel. I'm still like, listen, this is going to sound really cliche, but I remember, I think it was the 2020 football season, maybe even 2019. The podcast was very popular. This at the time it was through KSR, whatever. But the podcast has always been popular. And I remember, you know, don't tell Matt Jones, but I kind of just started posting clips of the podcast on YouTube and not telling anybody. And I remember there was one day where I posted a clip and it went, I went from like 5 subscribers to 6 or like 8 to 9. And I tell people this all the time that are starting a YouTube channel. It was harder for me to get from 0 subscribers to 1,000 than from 1,000 to 10,000. I have a buddy who's not in sports, but he started a YouTube channel. And I hate to see it because I think he kind of gave up. But I told him, I said, it was harder for me to get from 1 subscriber to 1,000 than it was from 1,000 to 10,000. And so what's my favorite moment of my YouTube career? Honestly, it's just, I think it was the moment last month when we hit 40,000. Because when you are fired up going from 8 to 9 subscribers, you don't think there's a day where you're going to get to 40, to 50, to 60, to 100. And maybe we never get there. And I'm not saying we will. Maybe we never get past 40,400 or whatever we're at right now. But to see the growth, to me, has been incredible. I say it all the time. I was early to YouTube. I was lucky. But what do they say? Preparation is where luck meets opportunity. And so I was lucky to be there early. But also the cool thing is, and this is a great kind of metaphor for life, is it really allowed me to make a lot of mistakes, to figure out what works for a thumbnail, what doesn't work for a thumbnail. You know, if you go back to the early, early days of this YouTube channel, I didn't even have a video component to it. I would just clip off audio and then put a still picture on it. And so you're talking about videos. I mean, you could go back to the beginning. I mean, videos that got 20, 30, 40 views in the entire totality of what we were doing. I don't think I was significantly less talented 4 or 5 years ago, but I was lucky. I was early. I got to experience some things. And then when the pandemic happened and Zoom became such an easy way to create video, that helped. By the way, you know who else deserves a shout out? And producer Matt, clip this off because I want to send it to him. Jason Silva, who was my manager at Betfred. If you've been with the pod for a while, Betfred Sportsbook was one of our great advertisers that we've been with. And Jason was the one. I want to give him a shout out. I love you, Jay. Shout out, Jay. He's my guy. He really pushed me to really lock in on video. And in a positive way, it was almost like a great coach saying, hey, let's work on this to make the video better. How can we make the frames better? How can we make the lighting better? And I don't think I would be where I am today if he didn't give me those nudges and he didn't really push me, because I'm an old school, I'm an old man. And when something's working, I'm hesitant to change. And so first, I didn't even know if we should go to video because the clips were having success even with a still picture on it. Then we did video and it was like, well, who really cares? You know, I mean, the quality doesn't have to be great. No, it does have to be great. And so Jason helped me get some really good frames. Jason helped me with the lighting. Now, we had a better background before. We're working on a studio, hopefully, for football season. We've got a little bit of a better background. But to answer your question, the top moment is just seeing the growth and seeing something when you work at something and seeing it grow organically. That's the coolest part. And the one thing I will say, I'm not saying this arrogantly, but I see the numbers for all these other channels. I think this offseason we became the number one home for college hoops content. I mean that sincerely. That's not a knock on anybody else. I just think we were. People come to this channel by the thousands every single day. I see the analytics. They're insane. Now, college hoops is slowing down. We're going to get to a lot more college football. But to answer your question, Jude, that to me is the best part. The best part is the growth, right? What is the old saying? What did Kobe Bryant say? The late, great Kobe Bryant. It's not about the destination. The journey is the destination. The journey is the best part. So the journey to 40K is incredible. Now we're trying to get to 50. Then we're going to try to get to 100. Then we're going to try to get to 1 million because we ain't slowing down anytime soon. So with that said, maybe it's time for us to get out of here. If you're not subscribed to the YouTube channel, we're over 40,000. Thank you again to Jude for the question because it's a perfect segue. Over 40,000 subscribers. Who wants to be part of getting to 50,000? If you're not subscribed on YouTube, click the subscribe button. Turn on notifications. Know when we go live. Make sure to do that. Also, make sure to subscribe to the pod, Apple, Spotify, whatever. By the way, even if you listen on YouTube, download the podcast. It really does help. You want to leave a 5-star review? You want to do your boy Torres a favor? My birthday's coming up next month, July-ish. So I guess it's not next month, but the following one. Go leave a 5-star rating and review on Apple. But it's time for me to get out of here. Make sure you're subscribed on YouTube. Make sure you're subscribed on Apple. And that's really it. Also, make sure you're following on social media. You can see it on the ticker. Aaron Torres Pod on Instagram. We post clips, all that good stuff. Make sure you're subscribed there. TikTok, no big deal. We're building up TikTok like we did with YouTube. Hate to brag. Hit 300 followers on TikTok this week. I'm finally starting to figure out TikTok. I think I'm the next great TikTok star. Hate to brag, but I think I am. But I'm finally figuring out TikTok like I did YouTube. Now, TikTok, I was way late to, but that's okay. That's okay. They might shut the whole thing down. I don't really know how that's all working out, but we'll see what happens with that. That's above my pay grade. But we're going to get out of here. Subscribe, rate, review, follow on social media, Aaron Torres Pod on Instagram, Aaron Torres Pod on TikTok, Aaron Torres Podcast questions if you have questions or comments for the show. Everybody listening, have a great weekend. Happy Mother's Day. Make sure to tell your mom, your wife, the mother in your life, how special they are. I'd say tell them Torres said how special they are, but that sounds kind of weird. I don't want your mom or your wife getting the wrong impression. But we appreciate moms on this show. We appreciate grandmothers on this show. We appreciate all the great women in our lives. We will be doing a Sunday night Mother's Day show. We may go a little bit later on Sunday because so many people are going to be out to dinner with family, etc. So make sure you know, make sure you're subscribed so you know when we're going live. Shout out to Torrin Craig. Shout out to Rachel, who hates my voice. Shout out to JJ Redick, you F-head, unblock me, bro. He's about to be the next head coach of the Lakers, isn't he? We'll be back on Sunday. Happy, by the way, shout out to all the mothers out there. We'll be back Sunday. We will see you then. Thank you guys and girls for checking us out.